Hello, everybody. Before we get into this episode of The Evolution of a Snake, we would like to let you know that we've created a Patreon page. So we're making a Patreon to help us produce and create our podcast. And as you know, we are two simple country girls deep diving into the life and times of the girly who never goes out of style, Miss Taylor Swift. We break down her impact, her flops, her wins, and the drama. So you might be asking, why are we requesting your money? Well, much to our surprise, this podcast requires a lot of work, and our episodes that deep dive into each year of her career take hours of planning and research, and the podcast is also recorded long distance, which makes the audio quality inconsistent, as I'm sure you've noticed. So with just a few of your hard-earned dollars, we've got three tiers, 1, 5, and 10. We can invest into some great microphones and editing software for the pleasure of your ears. And we can justify giving up hours of our lives to gossip about a pop star. We'll also be able to create on a regular basis, which is something that we get harassed about on a regular basis. So that means that you would get two episodes per month and some bonus content on the Patreon for our $10 Patreons. Our content will stay free on all of the places that you listen to your podcast, but if you'd like to listen to it early, look at our episode plans with links to the videos and all of the pictures of the looks that we talk about. And have a little bit of an increase in quality and listen to the podcast early, then please do feel free to go to our page, The Evolution of a Snake, on Patreon and support us. We also want to hear from you, so we'll be on Patreon a lot, having discussions and polls, asking you guys what you want to hear. We need that coin. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to The Evolution of a Snake. I am
And
Zach,
I'm Madeline.
and this is 2012, part one. So before we start, some housekeeping. We have to stand because Mason, Madeline's boyfriend, made a rebel of a careless man's careful daughter, and she is engaged.
I fucking got engaged.
That's insane.
And you know what the craziest thing is? This is just because we're in the confines of the Taylor Swift podcast. I will say this, and I will only say it here. The fact that I fucking got engaged during the fucking Lover era is just like peak Swiftie. Like,
Hey,
it literally
magnifique.
is.
How could it
I will
get
not say
better?
that in public to my friends in real life. But it with the Swifties, I will say that 13, Fearless Forever, Pop Tart Swiftie, Unicorn, Pegacorn, like
Born in
this, yeah,
1989.
it's like full circle. My whole life of being a Swiftie, engaged like a month after the Lover
I
album comes
know,
out.
as Lover happens, do you have a song, any Taylor song that speaks to the experience? Is there a song that really described the moment?
No,
Dark Blue
not the
Tennessee.
moment. Yes, of course. Dark Blue Tennessee. What else? No, not the moment itself. I mean, we have like literally like 10 or 15 Taylor Swift songs, specifically from Reputation, which is weird if you think about it, but that's just because that was when we were first dating. I'm going off. But the point is, yeah, we have a bunch of Taylor Swift songs that we relate to, but not one for the specific moment, because it was very casual, and Taylor doesn't do anything casually. Like, it
No,
wasn't,
that word is not in her lexicon. She
no
doesn't
no
know what it means.
And if she did have like a really low-key proposal, she would embellish a lot. And
Oh, yeah.
yeah,
It would have to be a moment for her, but we're never going to hear about it. That's the
no,
problem.
we literally would
That
never
is
get to
the
know
issue.
exactly how it
We have
happened.
lost that privilege, and this year is actually the start of us losing that privilege.
Yes.
So, this year was an interesting one. It's going to be an absolute headache for us to do because she was just everywhere doing everything. There are a lot of seminal moments in this year. I mean, the notes for the podcast just for part one is like 4 pages long.
Yeah, I was reading it and I was like, holy shit.
She did
I was like,
all
I'm
that.
fucked. Yeah, she did a lot. This was, to me, like, I know 1989 is really like her I'm a pop star now thing, but like in Red, like the Red era is really the moment when she became like a superstar. You know what I mean? And
This is
it's
when
just
she
like
changed her
instantly,
sound.
yeah, overnight, she was like everywhere,
Taylor
all the time,
Swift.
constantly, 24/7 media cycle.
And this is also the year that I think lays a lot of the groundwork for things that came back to bite her in the ass, or things that started to get a little bit out of control. It wasn't such a tightly controlled narrative anymore. Yes. So I think it went out of her hands in this year. And that was one of the trade-offs of, like, becoming a pop star, was that she could no longer really tightly control her image.
I think that she had this kind of naivety going into it, where she was like, you know, I have my good girl image, and it's just going to carry me through, you know? But it was.
Well.
I mean, it's just like, she had no fucking
idea. She set herself up for disaster.
She did.
And can I just say that the Rolling Stone article that recently came out, which is going to address a lot of the things that happened this year, we are prophetic, genuinely. Like, we, our episode about all of those things, those, like, moral issues with Taylor's rhetoric, she really addressed head on. She said, I listened to the Evolution of Snake and I have something to say.
Fuck, she literally did. I didn't even think of that when I was reading it. Fuck, you're so right.
Someone tweeted the podcast and was like, you guys are clairvoyants. And I was like, I know.
Fuck.
I know.
I fucking know, bitch.
We start the year, January 12th, 2012. She performs Safe and Sound with the Civil Wars in Nashville. And she's serving us full grandma chic, bangs, pearls, a red lip. Classic, classic Taylor.
Yeah, it that I remember that video so well.
Dude, the best thing was that the crowd shut up when she sang all of Satan's Satan Sound. Like, people weren't singing.
You have to be quiet. Yeah.
I mean, you won't hear the song unless you are.
Yep.
But she's wearing, like, a yellow dress, and this is when her full, like, I am a vintage shopper aesthetic came out. And boy, did it jump out this year.
Yeah, and she went antiquing a whole fuck ton this year, too. I remember that.
And she never shut up about it.
She was always antiquing. It was, like, her favorite thing. I'm antiquing. I'm antiquing. It's like, we get it!
This year, I feel like she was clawing for longevity, because she already had the popular success, and she was, like, a hot moment after, you know, the Kanye stuff. But this was, like, I want to cling to something that will outlive me, which is why I think she really attached herself to the Kennedys, because she wanted a legacy, a history, a moment.
That's probably true. And, like, the whole fixation on the Kennedys in general, it's like, it's so strange.
Bizarre.
It's
bizarre.
Because, I mean,
I still don't understand it.
It's not just, like, one thing. It's not just, like, her being really into Ethel Kennedy, which that by itself might have been okay, but it's also her dating a Kennedy, which is bizarre. She dated the only one she could have dated. She's like 18.
This year, really, like, it seemed, I remember at the time, it seemed like it came out of nowhere. But, like, when I was compiling the notes, I was like, she was grinding for this. She's worked for this. She wanted this. So, again, in January 2012, we have the iconic Vogue cover story, which is, like, one of my favorite photo shoots of Taylor, the visuals that she served. This is why she did the bangs and the blowout. This is what she did it for. And it's just, like, it's very shabby chic, but in a way that's not, like, dated. It's kind of, like, cool. She's looking very you know, cool girl. She's got her little baby Taylor guitar, and she's serving some looks. And I feel like she was trying to get the fashion people to take her seriously too. She was like, I don't just wear sparkly dresses and write all over my arms. I do more than that. And she did.
She sure as fuck did. I stan that article. And, like, I remember at the time, like, because, you know, I was such a, I don't know, attached to, like, the image that she had for like, Fearless and Speak Now. Like, the big curls and, like, being a country girl. Like, I didn't even like country that much, but I just, like, was so into her image of being, like, I love sparkles and I love having big curly hair and being, like, loud all the time and just, like, big, larger than life, blah, 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 whatever. And so when she first came out with that fucking article and I saw that fucking hair, I was like, this is the worst goddamn thing I've ever fucking seen. Which is so funny in hindsight, because
it was a shock to the system, though. Now we're used to her changing it up, but at the time, like, she had been so devout to her image before this happened, and it was just such a drastic shift.
Exactly. And I just remember thinking that it was awful. Like, how could she do this? Blah, blah, blah. I just on
She's
Tumblr just like
roots.
Ripping her a fucking new asshole over a hairstyle change. It's like, no wonder it took her so long to do it, because we're fucking animals. Like,
I
Jesus
know. And this is where the old Taylor stuff started, as in, like, people started saying, I miss the old Taylor, I wish she would come back, where did she go?
Right.
The thing is, like, the old Taylor is there at all times.
Yeah, literally constantly. Even when she killed her, she was still there.
Even when she killed her, she remained. She survived. So nobody has to worry about the old Taylor that's kind of dorky and, like, a little introverted. She's not going to go away. She's here. Yep. So I picked out a few moments from the article that were quite interesting. And she still, what's bizarre to me is that she's doing this whole image shift, but she really at this point was not ready to let go of the good girl stuff. That was still super important to her. So the writer of the article says that she might be edgier than her image suggests, but she's not Courtney Love. She has a deeply ingrained sense of appropriateness. She also knows her audience and knows they aren't ready for her to grow up yet, which I think was true and smart because we weren't ready for her to go full 1989 during Red. We needed to be eased into it, which is why the album, I think, is like half stuff we're familiar with and then half a really new direction.
Yeah, that's actually a really good point because, I mean, even going back to, like, the way I reacted to the hair, it's, like, obviously we weren't ready for her to change yet, but, like, she was gonna fucking do it either way. I think in the back of my mind...
She's a young person in their 20s. Of course she's gonna have this, like, impulse to completely change her life every 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, well, I think that she, even at that time, knew that she wanted to do an album like 1989. Maybe not, like, full-on. Like, she wasn't, like, secretly, like, I wish I was just making a pop album right now. But, like, I think that she loved making those pop songs so fucking much. And I think she just knew.
Yeah, because she had been writing on tour. So my guess is that the more Speak Now-y songs, because half of it is just by her. So I think all of those songs were written on tour. And then she was like, all right, I want to try something new. And she cut her hair and she was living. And we know that the Max Martin Shellback songs were recorded later in the process. So my guess is that when this story came out, We Are Never didn't exist. I don't think it had been added into the mix yet. And she continues to talk about the album. And she said there's been this earth-shattering, not recent, but absolute crash and burn heartbreak. And that will turn out to be what the next album is about. The only way I can feel better about myself to pull myself out of the pain of losing someone is writing songs about it to get some clarity. Do you think that song is 22, what she's talking about? Does that sound like 22 to you? No. It sounds like All Too Well. That's what it sounds like.
That's exactly what it sounds like.
And she also kind of touches on her anxiety. She says that the stakes are really high if you mess up, if you slack off and don't make a good record, if you make mistakes. You can run into some trouble either by being complacent or getting mouthy, which is interesting because I feel like she had to bite her tongue for so long and we're only just seeing her like really freewheel with whatever she wants to say.
Right. And even like our definition of her freewheeling is still pretty tight-lipped. You know what I mean? I feel like she still bites her tongue like all the fucking time. The most that she ever snapped was on Reputation. And I mean, it's looking at it now, it's like, this album isn't that crazy. But, like, at the time, the first time I heard it, I was like, this is insane!
I know, it was crazy.
So much shit! Yeah. So, like, comparing, like, that to, like, how she is, like, even, like, before Red, and then even during Red, it's just like, she really wasn't saying that much. She was saying more. No, but not also, nothing of, like, of real shit that she says now.
And she had that policy where she, like, I mean, she still kind of has this, where she refuses to address, like, the current happenings in her life. She only talks about things in hindsight, usually through song. So I guess it wasn't really surprising that she didn't talk about, like, Harry Styles or Connor Kennedy or whatever at the time. But it just felt weird because it was so dominating in the news that the fact that she didn't feel like she could speak up was really sad.
Well, I think also sometimes, like, her current life events, she kind of keeps a bit more mum about him because, like, they could change at any given time. So, like, posting up and being like, I'm in love with Harry Styles and we're going to be together forever.
And she's made that mistake. She learned her lesson with Calvin Harris.
I mean,
she learned if there's to keep one her mouth thing, shut.
I don't even, oh God, I can't even get into that.
She also gave us a list of things at this time that were red flags for her in a relationship. So someone who's obsessed with her Wikipedia page, if someone is threatened by the fact that she needs security and makes her feel bad for it, she says that she has it because there's a file of stalkers who want to take me home and chain me to a pipe. Very true. If they need to put her down a lot, at Jake Gyllenhaal. Also, someone who's obsessed with privacy, which I think is, again, at
Jake Gyllenhaal. He's just being roasted to a crisp, and we didn't even fucking know it.
Oh, we didn't know half of it. We found out. And then at the end of this article, again, she's leaving us a little Easter egg because the author asks her if she ever gets starstruck. And she says the only time she's ever been starstruck was meeting Caroline and Ethel Kennedy with her.
Who the fuck would be starstruck meeting one of the Kennedys? What do they look like? I couldn't give less of a fuck.
I don't know what they look like.
That's an Easter egg, yeah, for her crazy obsession. Who cares? Fuck.
Who cares? That's why I just wanted to shake her with the Kennedy stuff and be like, who gives a shite about this
garbage? Who fucking cares?
Shut up. So later after this interview comes out on January 20th, she attends the Ethel premiere at Sundance. And the weirdest thing about this is that she showed up to the red carpet wearing a beanie.
She had a beanie on.
To a red carpet. Like, I don't know what's going through her brain. It's embarrassing as
fuck. I don't know what's going through her fucking mind.
She takes a trip to London where we get some iconic candids that proved fodder for Tumblr for years. You know that one of her with the umbrella walking with headphones in the rain.
She looks at a swan. I made fun of it, but I still kind of fucked with that picture. I was like, this kind of does go
off. Oh, I love that photo. I love it. And also, I'm pretty sure that photo was taken at Princess Diana's memorial.
Yes, which is just an interesting little tidbit. She was reflecting on
R.I.P. Princess Di.
Yep, R.I.P.
And she served some looks throughout this trip. We get really good candidates of her in London. Apparently, this was a trip for her audition for Les Mis, which she didn't end up getting ultimately. But it was at this time that she was really like focusing on getting a movie role. Do you remember she was talking about that Joni Mitchell biopic? Mitchell was like, she might look like me, but she can't sing like me. So
Joni
sad.
Fucking Mitchell, pipe down. Which is funny that Joni Mitchell would say that, because I mean, what did Taylor go on to do with within the next few months trying to be like Joni Mitchell? And I bet Joni Mitchell ate her words after she listened to that album.
She
could deny that she was present. Her spirit was there.
Her spirit was there. It was incarnated on that album.
Yep.
And she also, for Les Mis, she was trying to get cast as Eponine. And just thinking about that, like, she could never do that role. Like, she just couldn't. She doesn't have the vocal chops for it. That's such a demanding, like, musical theater thing, which is why I always say, like, Taylor Swift is not an actress.
No.
And she's a singer, but she's not that kind of singer. So I think...
No, it's casting... completely different. It's completely fucking different. I don't know if everybody always realizes that. Like, it's like, okay, I think that Selena Gomez can sing just fine, but do I think that she could be on Broadway? No. Because she doesn't
Neither
have
can
that
Taylor.
Kind of a voice. Not everybody can do that. You can still sing, but you can't do a vocally demanding, you know, like, really putting yourself... You know what I'm saying? You know what I mean. I know that you do.
Yeah.
Because everybody else, I don't know.
Pop stars just usually can't. Like, Ariana Grande is the exception, not the rule. She has that, like, theatrical voice. But if you think about all the main pop girlies, like Katy Perry, Rihanna, they're not, like, ready to go on Broadway and play Eponine in Les Mis. So I'm not surprised that Taylor didn't get this.
Maybe
I am surprised that she got a screen test.
Like, the fact that they even considered it, and it pisses me off, because the fact that they did means that I had to sit there and read fucking discourse about it on Tumblr.com.
And imagine
about
what it would
people
be like.
Mad because
I have never wanted her to be in a musical. Never. Not once. Not for
never.
A moment.
I don't want it now. I can tell you that. I don't want it now. But she keeps forcing me to be put through it.
I don't know. I really, and she's so successful in her music career. I'm like, girl, that EGOT is not going to happen. You just got to stay.
I know.
In
it's just like, you can't be Gaga. You know, you just can't do
not.
It. But I would say that Taylor could do a Star is Born type of a film, a film like that. You know what I'm saying?
Not
a
traditional
musical, but
musical.
Like a Yeah, she could do like a Gaga thing and, you know, do the, you know, write with some random white guy and be like, oh, 10 Oscars to the whitest movie of all time. You know, she could do that.
Yeah, she could do that. And she could also, I think she could have feasibly, she could have done the Joni Mitchell biopic. I think she probably, her acting chops remain questionable to me, but she could have done something like that. And February 7th, she continues her incredible affair with acting and attends the press conference for The Lorax. And she crowns us all, or as Madeline likes to call it, what did you call it? Horton Hears a Who?
Horton Hears a Who. I thought it was Horton Hears a Who that she was in. I forgot, because I'm telling you, I have never fucking seen it. And I will continue to not see it, because I just don't care.
That was my favorite moment. Even when I was at
the height of my stanhood, I did not watch that movie. Madeline logs onto
Twitter and goes, you know, I never watched Horton Hears a Who. And everyone goes, okay.
Why do we care? And I was like, because Taylor was in it, and everybody was like, no, you fucking idiot. She was not in the Horton Hears a Who.
That should be in the Swifties Wild Impress. That really
it really should be. Yeah.
But she looked snatched at this press conference. These candidates from this year, like, really withstood the test of time. This is where she has that red lip and the bangs and the red dress. She was dropping an Easter egg, and we were all like, we're blind. We can't see. And she's with Zac Efron, who also is looking snatched. I mean, we have
isn't that where he dropped a condom out of his pocket?
Yes.
That's what I care about.
This is where he was walking the red carpet and he pulled something out of his pocket and a condom landed on the red carpet. You can literally see his publicist being like, oh no. So then we have on February 12th, the Grammy Awards, and Taylor performs Mean in her Little House on the Prairie getup. She plays the banjo that has a 13 on it. She does the Mean Lean, and this was goodbye to old Taylor. This was like the last time she was gonna fuck with that, with the country stuff, and she hasn't really done it since then. And it's a pretty good performance, I have to say. It's one of her better Grammy performances. And she says, someday I'll be singing this at the Grammys. What is she doing? Singing it at the Grammys. But Speak Now did not get a nomination for Album of the Year, which I thought was kind of bad. But
it was a snub.
It didn't have the hits. That was the problem. It didn't have the hits.
Yeah, that was really it didn't have the fucking hits. And she knew it. That's why she released Red, or part of the reason, I should say.
That's totally why she released Red. And also, Album of the Year, Speak Now deserved, because it's such a good album. Like, the songs in isolation are good, but the way that it is amazing is how it all works together. She was robbed, but she did win Best Country Song and Best Country Solo Performance, but she didn't win Best Country Album, but the Civil Wars did. So, I mean...
Okay, we'll take that. Yeah.
We stan. Kanye West was the most nominated artist at this year's Grammys. The red carpet look is an iconic serve. It's classic Taylor, but with a new twist. Was this the Ellie Saab dress? I loved it. The high neck, the glitter, I thought it was amazing. And she also served us by wearing her hair up and down. She wore it up, and then when she was taking her photos with her Grammy, she put the bangs down. So I was like, thank you, legend. Yes. So after the Grammy, she's on a winning streak. And February 20th, she goes to the Ellen show with Zac Efron. This is one of my favorite appearances of hers. It's so cute. Ellen makes really weird, invasive comments about how they're dating. She looks like a grandma. She's wearing that, is it a koi fish dress or are they flowers?
It looked nice. I just wish that it wasn't so, bohemian granny style.
I know. I just feel like this era needed a little bit of younger.
It was such a topic in the community, you know what I mean? Just like completely ripping her new asshole.
I liked it, but I was really up her ass at this point.
I liked it half the time, and I didn't like it the other half of the time. But it's funny because she has not dressed like that since. It's just gone. Like, that whole entire look is just missing.
And she drops it by the end of the year, kind of, anyway. So it was I don't know. I think it was probably to do with the Kennedy obsession, because it was very 50s, 60s.
That's exactly what I was going to say, too. It had to have
She was wearing bros all the time.
Yeah.
And she performs an iconic improvised version of Pumped Up Kicks with Zac Efron. Do I think that was entirely improvised? No. Taylor doesn't do anything spontaneously like that. I'm not saying she can't. I'm just saying she wouldn't. So I don't think that she just, made that up on the spot. But she has tea with Sophia, Grace, and Rosie, the world's most annoying children. They ask her if she has a boyfriend, and she says she doesn't. Which is true. I don't think she was dating anyone.
I believe it. Implicitly, I believe that for a while after Jake Gyllenhaal, she said no.
Should have said no, and she said no.
Yeah.
She talks about her pathetic single girls party for Valentine's Day. That was a big thing on Tumblr. The pathetic single girls party.
God.
That was a really big thing. We were all like, oh my God, can you imagine Taylor and Selena and Diana eating cookies with Meredith?
Oh my god, Diana Agron. It's just like, oh
That
my
still
god, I
happens
can't
to this day in
think.
our year
I
of
can't
2019.
think. Just like she has all these fucking broomstick friends, like just fucking a
So get
broomstick,
rid of
and
them.
everyone is like, "Stan, I stan." It's just like,
Same with
who?
Karlie
What
Kloss.
does
I will
she
never get
think
it.
about?
I will never
And
get
you
it.
know, it's like I don't dislike Diana or Karlie Kloss by any stretch of the imagination, but they are so boring.
Yeah, there's
Like,
nothing
what is
about
there to
them that is
stan?
interesting.
Carly does some cool things. Like, she genuinely does, but it's like, it's just not, it's still not interesting to me.
And she showed her cat fail video of Meredith, which I love. I love the Meredith content. She's the queen, the supreme of all the cats. She will be the last remaining being on this earth. I think she will survive a nuclear
No,
holocaust.
she's
She's very
definitely the
powerful.
superior cat of the three, which is sad because almost nobody agrees with that. Everybody likes Olivia, but I mean, Meredith is clearly the best
No.
one.
I know. And Meredith is elusive and she attacked someone at a secret
I
session. So
thought,
we have to stand. We have to.
and ever since then, she hasn't been allowed to return to the sessions ever since. Banned.
She's been banished. So in March, she heads off to Australia and New Zealand for the last leg of the Speak Now tour. She adds Safe and Sound and alternates Eyes Open to the set list at the end of the show, you know, when she's doing 15.
Did we?
And it's so weird to see her wearing bangs and doing this
Yeah,
show.
it's
So
the same
weird.
thing like at the end of the Red Tour when she does the 1989 hair. It's like, what the fuck are you doing? Like, can't you wait?
Who is
Yeah.
that?
Can't you fucking wait?
Yeah, I think it's because those legs of the tours get tacked on as like
Yeah.
afterthoughts. So she's like
Very
already
true,
moving
very
on.
true. But I fucking hate the song called Eyes Open. I hate that fucking song. Did we talk about this in the last episode?
I don't mind it. I think we did. I don't mind it. I don't think
I
it's
fucking
terrible,
hate it.
but
There's a sect of fans that's like, eyes open, eyes open. It's just like, it's like the worst. It doesn't
it
deserve
doesn't
anything.
deserve.
It's overrated. It literally is. And even though it's like barely ever talked about, the little bit that it gets, it's too much. It doesn't deserve it.
And there are certain songs that just, why do you guys freak out? Like, I'm only me when I'm with you. Like,
I
why
mean,
is
Jesus
that a
fucking Christ.
standstill? And Hot Shell Ray opens for this leg,
Wait,
which gives you
fuck.
an idea of how long ago this was.
Her fucking star-studded party with Hot Shelly
Oh
Ray.
my God, stop with Parachute and Hayley Williams. On April 12th, she goes to the ACM Awards. She wears her hair and her bangs. She has a lot of makeup on. I think it really aged her. This is that white dress, the long one with the sides
Yes.
cut out, and she has
Yep.
really heavy eye makeup. I just had a complete like flashback. She was doing an interview on the red carpet, and she did this whole interview, and at the end, the interviewer goes, "Taylor Swift,
Just, dude, for
everyone."
real favorite. That fucking, what is that lady on fucking CMTs? What is her
That
name? It's
video.
like Deb or some shit like that. Deb
No,
Kennedy or some
we need to
shit.
find her and the Swifties need to threaten her.
Taylor Smith, everybody.
How do
And
you
my
not
favorite thing
know who
about it
Taylor
is that
Swift
like
is in
Taylor reacts
2012?
to it too. Like she doesn't like she like kind of like kind of looks at the
She never
camera and is just
breaks,
like,
and this is where she breaks.
it's like the time when she like stuck out her hand to the interviewer to shake it, and the interviewer doesn't notice and just keeps talking, and Taylor just like turns and looks at the
So Taylor Smith, everyone, Taylor Smith. She wins Entertainer of the Year, and she gives a shout out to Kevin Maguire, who was a cancer patient who was supposed to be her date, but he wasn't able to attend. So she thanks him in her speech. And Blake Shelton and Reba McEntire make fun of her for going on a date with Tim
Tim
Tebow. Do you
Tebow,
know who
yes,
that
I remember. He
is?
was a football man at some point, and he would always like get on his knees and like pray and thank Jesus. yeah, so he
Oh
was,
God, of
yeah,
course
of
Taylor
course
won on a
she
date with
did.
him. Of course she did. Or they went out to dinner or something. Like it wasn't even a date, but I remember this being like the first instance of people using her dating as a punchline. And this was like before it got really bad and it was just the only thing people ever talked about. Then on May 28th, she's kind of quiet for a while. And she was photographed at a studio with Ed Sheeran. And what I'm thinking is that this was not, because I remember for the Red era, they wrote two songs together, and one of them, Never Saw the Light of Day. And Everything Has Changed was written on a trampoline, and this was just like a regular studio. So I'm thinking that that was the session for whatever duet that is
Yeah,
not been
I kind of
released
wish they would
yet.
release it because honestly, I guess we can get into this more later, but yeah,
Leak
leak
it.
it. like, everything has changed. I feel like, I don't know, it's just, like, I was so hyped about them working together, because this was back when I
know. Yeah. We freaked out. I was like, Ed Sheeran. Because at the time, if you think about it, like, at the time, Taylor was, like, she was a love song singer. Like, she just sang about her feelings, and Ed Sheeran had just come out. He hadn't broke the U.S. yet. This was before he toured with Taylor, obviously. And he was, like, kind of an indie Tumblr artist. So we were all standing on Tumblr, but nobody really knew who he was. So when they were pictured together, we were all like, oh, my God, this is going to be the most emotional song of all time. Yeah, and just, like, both such good songwriters.
I mean, Ed's recent work is...
It's not bad. The song is pretty.
Yeah, you know. But it could have been a lot more. It could have been so much. I wish they had done a breakup song. That's what I wish.
So about, like, 2 weeks later... John Mayer does an interview with Rolling Stone.
This fucking bullshit.
He addresses Dear John for the first time.
He's just a whiny little bitch. Like, listen to me, John Mayer. How many times have you written about women in a light that maybe wasn't totally fair or totally accurate, and you've just gotten away with it because you're a sack of shit man? Like, how many times has that happened? Probably so fucking many. A million.
A million.
But Taylor's not allowed to say...
He also did the same thing to her.
It just doesn't make any fucking sense that he was this mad about it. Only because it was such an expose. He's never dated a songwriter before up until that point. Like, who did he date?
He never dated someone that could play him at his
But you know what? And, like, I dislike him so much.
It's a classic response, though.
He's such a snake.
So this is what he said for all of you who didn't have the pleasure of reading this when it came out. He said, I didn't deserve it. I'm pretty good at taking accountability, and I never did anything to deserve that. It was a really lousy thing for her to do. It's just, and he goes on to say, I never got an email. I never got a phone call. I was really caught off guard. And
why the fuck would she call you?
Why
would she call you?
Why? It doesn't really sound like it ended
like
well.
It was pretty fucking bad.
Hey,
by
the way,
like, it was bad.
I would like to talk about how you took advantage of me.
Yeah.
Is that okay?
Fuck.
And then he's asked about that line, don't you think I was too young to be messed with? And he flat out says,
well, of course he doesn't want to go into
that.
It because he knows he was a fucking scumbag.
John
Mayer, comment on the fact that you dated Taylor Swift when you were 32 and she was 19. I'm putting the microphone in your face. I want to hear what your opinion on that is today. I want to know.
I want to hear.
Do
you
think
she was
think
too
that
young
now,
to be
sir?
Messed with? Perhaps. Is there some truth to that allegation? He also said that it was abusing her talent to rub her hands together and go, wait till he gets a load of this. That's bullshit. So here's the thing. That is not what the song was. The song, if you fucking heard the song, John Mayer, if you had a business that you cared about and you listened to this song, you would know that this actually is not a fuck you song. You can hear the emotion, the rawness, the vulnerability, the, like, desperate sadness. It is not a takedown song. It's an, I'm so hurt, I have no other
this
way
is like, and you have
this.
To think about it. It's like, you know, maybe if he had, like, an ounce of understanding for, like, how fucked up it was that she was 19 and he was 32, he would have more of an understanding of, like, what the fuck possibly that he might have done that could have pissed her off so much. It's like, here's this, like, young girl, and here's this 32-year-old fucking man who was probably at the time one of Taylor's, like, songwriting idols because he was so, you know, lauded.
He was. She talked about
and
him
it's just
so
like, and,
highly.
And then you just, like, shit all over that. It's like, yeah, I bet that was really, really borderline traumatic for her. And he's just gonna, like,
yeah, I'm sure
squat
it was a really...
and take shit all over it. Like, that's all he did. It's just like, well...
There's a power imbalance there that I don't think gets mentioned often enough when talking about Taylor and John Mayer's relationship specifically. She was 19 years old. It's so creepy. Like, it really is such a weird situation. And also, if you're going to date Taylor Swift, you're really going to turn around and tell me that you didn't expect her to write a song about you. I think what really probably got him about that is that he's used to being, like, the prodigy. Like, when he was young, he was, like, the prodigal singer-songwriter, the next Bob Dylan, whatever. And Taylor really has outshone him in all of those respects. Like, she has been way more successful than his career ever was, purely because she's more commercial, but also because she's super talented. And he couldn't come out and say, this is a bad song. Because it's a fucking amazing song and it slaps. That's what pissed him off. If it was a bad song, he would never have addressed it. The fact that it was so good and so searing really got
Yeah, him. He's a whiny bitch, baby. That's all there is to it. No respect.
We
no
don't
respect.
Stand. So June 27th, after this comes out, she goes to lunch with Selena Gomez in Malibu. And do you remember that video? I think it was
Dude,
on Vine. It was called
I
like One and
think
Only
about it.
Vine, where she's like, "It feels like summertime." And Selena
Yep,
Gomez
it's
is like,
summertime.
"Yep." And that's the whole
It's
video.
literally, I think about it often, like way more than I should for what it was. It's just like seared into my
I
brain.
remember her posting it and me being like, "What is this
It was
for?
summertime. It was summertime,
What
Zach. It was
purpose is this?"
summertime. There's an ice
It
cream
was
cone in the video,
summertime.
too.
She was right. All right, so now we're getting into the juice. We're getting to the juicy part of the year. Controversial, still discussed to this day. On July 4th, you know what? Weird shit always happens to her on the 4th of
Yeah,
July. She should just stay
honestly,
inside. I think
truly.
she's learned that now. She just stays inside, shuts her curtains, and minds her business. She hung out with Patrick Schwarzenegger at the Kennedy compound in Hyannisport. So apparently, what I read when I was researching is that people thought she was dating
I
him for
remember
a
that.
while. And I remember there was a joke made in an awards show about him. So that definitely was a theme. But the thing is, I think Patrick brought her there and she met Connor through that. That's my
It
guess
has to
on the
be.
situation.
Absolutely has to be that. Like, there's a big difference between 19 and 32, and then 18 and what was she, 22? That's a little
Yeah.
bit, it's like, gray area. It's not totally fucked. It's
Yeah,
just
it's
weird.
weird. It's not wrong, but it's weird. So let's get into the whole Connor Kennedy thing. I've listed down all of the major events. We'll go through them. So she's first spotted in Mount Kisco in New York for the first time with Connor Kennedy. And she also flies to Hyannisport that first weekend for the first time. And she was spotted on a trampoline with Connor Kennedy. Do you
I
hear what I'm
absolutely just heard
saying?
you.
Do
I just
you
heard you.
hear?
I'm hearing it. I know exactly what's going on.
For everyone that doesn't know, we're talking about Everything Has Changed because she said she wrote that song on a trampoline. And I mean, we all know that that is the only song, bar Starlight, maybe, that had anything to do with
Yes.
Connor Kennedy.
On a trampoline, everybody.
So she went to do a lot of stuff in Hyannisport this summer. She goes sailing. And I have to say, the looks that she served, this is where the Grandma Chic 50s thing really was a serve.
Well, she was
She was wearing
constantly
that
hanging
like
out.
polka dot bikini and the high waisted
Fucking Ethel
shorts.
Kennedy
She
was
looked
there, and
good.
she had to put on appearances. And then she got really into it. She was like, "You know what? This
Oh,
actually
she was
serves."
cosplaying. So she went sailing, and Diana Agron was there,
Fucking cursed
bizarrely. Don't know
images. Cursed
why.
images. I can see it in my head.
Cursed images. And we get those photos. You know what I'm talking about, where Connor Kennedy is just like a turtle to me. He's so weird. He was just like an
I remember
awkward
there being
teenager. And he's wearing like these awful clothes, and Taylor's trying to serve, and there's just these weird photos
Oh
of him
my
kissing
God.
her and like
I was like,
holding
this
her
is so
waist.
fucking
It's
odd. And there's
so
like a pizza at
traumatizing.
some point. Somebody's eating pizza, right?
Yep, they went
They
to a
got
pizza
pizza.
shop. She talked to all the little
There were children
kids.
everywhere,
It was
including
so
Connor.
weird.
Like,
It was
what the
so
fuck? It's
strange.
bizarre.
And I remember seeing all these candidates and being like, "What is going on?"
I'm staying with my sister because I'm going to go to college this next year and we wanted to hang out for a week or so, you know? So I'm out of town. I'm in a hotel, in a business port in the hotel on Tumblr.com, looking at these images, speechless, absolutely struck.
And wondering what
Yeah, this is like,
the
it's
fuck
just like the
is going
weirdest experience of
on.
my life. And people were standing it.
It was just so weird. And she wasn't talking again. And she wasn't doing interviews. She wasn't
We
doing
don't
press.
know
Like, she was just
anything about this
sitting,
relationship.
but
We don't
doing
know what
this.
happened there. In Hyannisport,
Nothing.
it's anything goes. It was like the Roman
We
Empire. We
don't
don't know.
know. It was a bizarre moment in history.
I felt like I was like the only voice of reason. I kept saying, this is so fucking
Gustavo,
weird.
I
Nobody else thinks so?
forgot.
And it was like, Taco! Taco!
So this was just a really bizarre moment. And then she starts to get some bad press for this. So she allegedly crashes a wedding. Do you remember this? This was a drama. She allegedly crashes a wedding with Connor Kennedy, and the host, the mother of the bride, came out publicly and
No, I
said, "We
what the
asked
f
them to
I
leave
do not
twice and
remember
they
this.
wouldn't go."
What the fuck?
And it got,
Oh my God.
wow, it got so drama that Taylor's publicist had to be like,
Holy
"That isn't true."
shit.
I think that Hyannisport is just like a bunch of rich people hanging out on the beach and they all know each other. So I bet like Connor had a friend at the party for the
But like
wedding and
that's
Taylor just like went with
I
him and she didn't think I don't know. That's the thing. I don't think she would do something intentionally like that. I really think it would be a mistake and she wouldn't realize that they wanted her to leave. Because I think I would like to think that she's the kind of
person. What's interesting to me is that they refused to leave the first time. It's like, were they drinking? Like, what?
I know. And can you imagine how shitty it would be if Taylor Swift showed up at your wedding?
Yeah.
I'd be like, this is my day. What the fuck are you doing here? And then Ethel Kennedy is giving an interview for her documentary. And someone asked if Taylor would be a potential daughter-in-law, because this is how crazy everybody is. Four photos of them kissing on a beach and they're getting married. August 13th, 2012, the iconic show-stopping, never been done before, red live chat happens. What did you think of the red live chat, Madeline?
So the red live chat, yes.
It was a moment.
It definitely was a moment. As far as, like, all of the live chats go, I seem to remember, I have a particular fondness for the Speak Now live chat, but the Red live chat, even I, as a Speak Now stan, have to admit that the Red live chat was probably the best live chat that she ever did. There was something, I don't know, when she took the fucking curtain off the album cover.
Oh my god, I don't know what it was.
It was, I mean, she just fed us. I don't remember. I don't even have the words for it. It was the best live chat, hands down. Way better than the 1989 live chat.
The production of it was so good. Like, I felt like, I mean, 16-year-old me in a car at 7 a.m. on the way to school, I felt like I was there in her living room. And the craziest thing is that a mere 7 years later, I would be sitting in that living room. We need to start counting how many times I can drop that throughout the podcast.
Yep. Always got to bring it up as many times as possible.
Yes, as many times. But yeah, so this was also, I would say, the first secret session, because this was the first time that fans had been to her house. And I have to say, the red live chat is really what the way that she's interacting with everyone, that's really what the secret sessions are like. She sits in a chair and like preaches for a couple hours.
Have you ever met anybody that went to that?
No, but we would love to hear from you if you have. Weirdly, this was before the secret sessions had started, but they had that mentality of like sticking together and denying things that were true just because they were told to. So I remember like the track list leaked and we were all like, oh my God, Sad, Beautiful, Tragic, 22. Those all sound like such fun songs. And the like red live chat people were like, no, no. Those aren't the songs. We know what they're called. We heard them. She played them for us.
This time, like, when the Lover leaks happened and all the sessions were like, that's not true. I was like, so it is.
Literally. Swifties need to learn that you can't protest too much because we know.
We know. Yeah.
If you go out of your way to say something is wrong, then you've told us that it's right. I would love to know more about like the process of getting invited. Like, was it Taylor Nation that reached out to them?
Yeah, it's literally, that's the thing about that live chat is that none of that information was ever, I never fucking found out. I just kind of thought, I don't know what I thought back then. I remember being surprised that there were fans there. Like, it was always very mysterious back then when she had those secret events. Like,
also,
when
this
she
was a one-off. Like, we didn't know that she was going to be doing this again. So I think that people weren't, like, trying to cheat the system.
Well, and I mean, she didn't. The whole entirety of the Red era, that was the only time she did something like that. She didn't do anything like that again until 1989. And I think people still associate, like, 1989 with being the beginning of that kind of shit. But really, it was the Red live chat.
The intellectuals will know that the Red live chat was where it first happened. Yes. So she reveals the album cover pretty much like the first minute that she goes on air, which was kind of shocking.
Yeah,
she would never do
that. That's
us
really
now.
What shook me the most about it. Considering like everything else in the world, like her just being like, so guys, this is the title. It's like, oh, you're just going to tell us? Wow.
And show us the visual. Like, wow.
Yeah.
2019 Taylor could never. We were starving between me and the Lover album, like cover release.
Yeah.
But what did you think of the cover? I liked it a lot. I was kind of surprised that she wasn't looking at the camera and that it wasn't her face, kind of.
I remember actually liking it. I don't know if it was like instantly like, I love it. But I definitely remember being like, it's good. I remember thinking it was better than the Speak Now cover. And honestly, I still think that.
I mean, this was her being like, I'm grown up now.
It's very sophisticated. It honestly is a really good indicator for what the album's going to be like. Because on the whole, like, yeah, there are pop songs on it and there are some bops and shit. But for the most part, it's kind of a fucking sad ass album. So
yeah, it's depressing.
It's a really good album cover for, you know. Of course, I didn't know that then, but because then she played We Are Never Ever Getting Back Together. So.
And you were punched in the face.
Yeah.
But for this live chat, I think the funniest thing is, as usual, she was dropping hints and we were ignoring them. So she posted that Instagram of her with those red shoes. And then she made this weird Vine, I think it was, of like her, like a selfie of her with this awful grainy red filter, and we were all dragging her. We were like, what are you doing? This is so embarrassing. Why would you post something like this? And then it all clicked.
Yeah, these are things that absolutely haunt me, because ever since the red shoes, and we didn't know it, nobody has let her do or say anything before, like in between albums, without it being about an album, even when it's not. So it's just like,
especially when it's not.
Yeah, especially when it's fucking not. So those red shoes really kicked something off that I don't think that she knew at the time.
So she gets into showing us the album cover, and she explains what the album is about. And this is what she said. I wrote a song called Red, thinking about what that means to me and all the different emotions that are written about on this album. They're about the tumultuous, crazy, intense, semi-toxic relationships I've experienced in the last 2 years. Intense love, frustration, jealousy, and confusion, all of those are red. There's nothing in between or beige about those feelings. And boy, did we hear that speech every single day of our lives until 1989 came out.
Yep. That's one of those quotes that, like, nobody would let it fucking die.
I loved the concept. I was really, really into the concept. And obviously, Miss Joni Mitchell and Blue, Taylor had been taking her notes. And she was like, I can do it too. And she did.
To this day, I think, personally, her most, like, as in terms of a theme, like, it's her most, like, clear theme,
mission,
like,
statement,
clear idea. Yeah, which is funny considering, like, the hodgepodge that Red is, but that's, like, kind of the point of the album, you know what I mean? Like, it's literally the point is that it's a hodgepodge, just like the color red. She really nailed it.
She served us. And she said that she picked between 30 and 35 songs to make Red, and this keeps me up at night, because we probably heard, I mean, including Better Man and Babe, we probably heard like 20-ish songs that were supposed to be on Red, and the other 15 are going to be now trapped in Big Machine purgatory, so I lose.
Yep. So the only thing that we need to take away from the fact that Taylor's masters are locked up in Big Machine's fucking vault is that Zach loses. That's it.
I lost. I stay losing. It's so unfortunate. Scooter Braun and Scott Borchetta, you've done a lot of things wrong, but this is the most egregious.
This is the most heinous.
She also reveals to us on this live chat that she wrote a song with Ed Sheeran on a trampoline. And can we explain, like, what a moment that was for us? Ed Sheeran was, like, still an underground indie artist. Like, if you were on Tumblr, you knew who Ed Sheeran was. This was, like, when he was doing the A-Team and Lego House. And when we heard that he was going to be doing a song with her, I was like, wow, this is going to be the most heartbreaking love song of all time. It's going to be devastating. I'm going to cry. And that's not really what we got.
Yeah, no, we were gearing up because, like, I mean, back then, I think that we all thought he was, like, I want to be clear, like, we didn't think it. He just was, like, he's such a good songwriter, and she's such a good songwriter. I was like, we're about to get fucking beat into the dirt. Like, I'm ready. And then fucking what we got was,
it was cute, but it wasn't what we expected.
No, it was not a serve. It was not what one would have thought that these two, like, people would have come together to write. We wanted a fucking breakup song. That's what we wanted. That's all that we asked for. And they didn't serve it to us. On Red, of all albums, you couldn't give us a breakup song?
I know. What's wrong with
that? It doesn't fucking add up. And it still honestly pisses me off. Because they've now, and I'm about to go off, they've now worked on two songs. And on one of them, they flopped. And on another one, they did Endgame. And Ed is rapping, mysteriously. Like, it's just like, they have missed the opportunity.
It's gone
two times now to serve. I you know what? I'm still holding out. I'm still waiting for, like, a really good Ed and Taylor collab. Even with all this bullshit that Ed's doing now, I mean, I'm still expecting a little bit of something, a serve at some point.
Please. Really interesting. I'm, like, over Ed Sheeran, ex-Taylor. I've been let down too many times. I don't want to hear it. The last thing I wanted in this world was a trap pop song from Ed Sheeran and Taylor Swift. Like, I didn't want it.
It was that song. Endgame is completely out of left field. It still is. Like, when I think about it, I'm like, it sounds fake. It sounds so fucking fake when I think future Ed Sheeran, Taylor Swift. Like, no. Didn't happen.
It didn't, and you know what? It didn't happen. It did not serve the way she wanted it to serve.
No, it did not perform.
But from this session where they wrote Everything Has Changed, allegedly there is another song that didn't make it onto the album, which I guess I lost again, because that is still in the Big Machine Purgatory, so we'll never hear it. But I think it's probably in the same vein as Everything Has Changed, because Taylor was like so in love with Connor Kennedy, wanting to become a Kennedy, being obsessed with Kennedys. I mean,
yeah, and I'm sure Ed was like, which is why the song sucks.
Ed's like, I'm trying to write a song about a drug addict dying on the street, and Taylor's like, I want to date a Kennedy.
Yep, that's literally that. That's the entire songwriting session right there.
She says, also on this live chat, she says that it's difficult to give clues because we figure it out. And she doesn't want to give everything away in her song liner notes. And she says she's not cryptic enough. Well, she became cryptic. Cryptic to the point where we didn't understand anything that she was fucking doing in 2019. So
yeah, she really overdid it. Like, every era, she's gotten, like, worse and worse about it. This is like her origin story. It's like her feeling like she's not cryptic enough and, like, researching and studying how to become mysterious.
The next album we're going to be getting it in, like, hieroglyphics or Morse code, something that really we just can't understand. And you know what? I can't be bothered.
Yeah,
anymore.
No, I'm done with it. I'm so fucking sick of it. Like, it's exhausting. I'm going to let the young people do it for me from here on out. Like, drop, you guys can solve the stuff, and then, like, I'll just believe everything you say.
Until you prove me wrong.
Yep.
She also talks, other things she mentions in this live chat, she talks about baking and pumpkin spice, which was a big thing for her back then. And then she goes into talking about the one and only legend, the woman, the myth, Meredith Swift. And she says that she's good. She's just living her cat life in her apartment and traveling. I don't think cats usually travel, but good for Meredith, I guess.
Yeah, I always think about that. I actually wonder, like, how well those cats actually travel. I'm sure, like, since they were kittens when she got them, they're kind of used to it. But, like, my cat would not fucking put up with this bullshit.
Cats are difficult. And she always has them, like, in her dressing rooms and stuff. And then she complains about Meredith hating her. And I'm like, well, maybe because she's stateless most of the time. And then she goes into playing We Are Never. She's like, this is the lead single. It's a really romantic song. It's touching and sensitive. It's to my lovely ex-boyfriend. It's called We Are Never Ever Getting Back Together. When I tell you that my jaw hit the floor when she said that that was the title of the song, and then that guitar string kicked in, wow, what a moment.
It was a moment. I can't lie to you. It was something else. It really came out of left field at that time, because I don't think that she gave us any hints at the time that she was going in a different direction, or did she? I can't remember.
No, she
didn't.
Because the last, here's the thing, the reason why I think we were all really confused was because the last release we got was Safe and Sound.
Yeah, which, I mean, we were, like, ready to be served, like, singer-songwriter, which,
acoustic,
I mean, ultimately
vibes.
We did, you know, there were songs like that on Red, but that was not the first taste that we had of the album, because we were served We Are Never Ever Getting Back Together, which is, like, the antithesis of Safe and Sound in all fucking ways. But, you know, it's like, that was kind of the moment that when I look back on it, I always had to remind myself, like, you know, if I ever was like, oh my God, the first single, I hate it, the whole album's gonna be bad, like with me, I was like, I know that there's other shit on the album that isn't anything like this, so I just don't worry about it. So We Are Never Ever Getting Back Together is like the the original, like, what the fuck is this single for me, and I'm sure for a lot of other people too.
Yeah, so I think that Taylor, I mean, she recently said in an interview that she likes to bait and switch, and she pointed to Reputation as a good example of that. But I think that Red is a way better example of that, because We Are Never Ever Getting Back Together, I mean, that vibe carries over really only to like 3 songs, and the rest of the album is more of the typical like Taylor fare, but a little bit grown up. So I think that she just, as we said, she wanted to be a pop star in this era. This was the moment where she really was like, okay, world domination, I'm doing it.
Yep, I'm getting ready. I am gearing up. And it so is, like, the era of, like, it to me is, like, such a in-between, like, a foreshadowing era for, like, everything that was to come. Because in my mind, like, Fearless and Speak Now and the end, sometimes the debut are kind of, like, linked. But Red kind of goes with them, but Red also kind of goes with 1989 and Rep and Lover. You know what I mean? Like,
it's truly, like, a stopgap between 2 different versions.
It really is. It is. Yeah, 100%.
But I, on the contrary to Madeline, so I remember I came on Tumblr.com after the song dropped and I was obsessed. Like, I loved it the moment I heard it. I still think it's one of my favorite first singles of hers. I thought it was so catchy. It was so fun. It was so, like, modern. And Taylor, at this point, had been getting a lot of criticism for being a little too old lady for her age. So this was also her trying to be like, I'm cool, guys. I know what people think about me. With the lyric, like, indie record that's much cooler than mine, she was showing a self-awareness that we hadn't really seen before.
Yeah, that was definitely the first time she ever, like, kind of, like, quote unquote made fun of herself. And then later on Red, she also does the in 22.
Yeah, so I love the song. So the day that it came out, it hit #1 on iTunes, and it sold the most digital copies that a song has ever sold in its first week, which was 623,000 digital only copies, which is insane. And this is a particularly poignant moment in her trajectory, because it was produced by Max Martin and Johann Schellback, the dream team who has created all the songs that you know and love, Style, Shake It Off, Bad Blood, all of the hits, I Knew You Were Trouble, were really instigated by him. Yes. So this team, this combination was seen as very kind of like an avant-garde move for her, because she had kept her collaborators super tight. I'm pretty sure it was just Liz Rose and Nathan Chapman and like a few other people here and there. But this album, it was an experiment. She tried working with a bunch of different people, and she definitely found success with Max Martin. Yep. And it hit #1 on the Hot 100. And if you can believe it, this was her first song ever to be #1.
It still blows my fucking mind. Like,
the fact that Love Story.
Yeah, you know what I mean? But I mean, it's funny that, like, nothing from Speak Now could have ever.
She likes to take phrases that we hear a lot and make them inextricably attached to her. And We're Never Getting Back Together. I mean, I can never hear those words. Even the words never, ever, I can't hear without thinking about this fucking song. So she really, it did what it needed to do.
100%. I mean, she's like, it very much solidified her, like, in people's minds. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, she has monopolized not getting back together with your ex-boyfriend. She really has.
Yeah. I mean, if you want to get back together with your boyfriend, Taylor Swift says nope.
Nope, she said, you don't fucking do that, you hear me?
Before this, I think her highest charting song to date, which you're going to hate, was Today Was a Fairy Tale.
Oh my god.
So what? I mean, those are two evils to you, so which one do you prefer?
Wait a minute. Okay, listen, if we're gonna say wait a minute, Today Was a Fairy Tale is not even in the realm of We're Never Ever Getting Back Together. That's not even fair. So it's like, disgusts me that Today Was a Fairy Tale charted higher than You Belong With Me. Even higher than You Belong With Me. That pisses me off. It's sick. It's twisted.
They just shouldn't be in the same sentences. I love Today Was a Fairy Tale. I think she's a cute girl. But highest charting song before We Are Never? I mean,
it doesn't make any fucking sense. And let me ask you something. If you asked, like, a normal person on the street, do you know Today Was a Fairy Tale by Taylor Swift? The answer is no. No. You tell me, how is that possible?
But you ask them if they know We Are Never Ever Getting Back Together, and
they're like, fuck yeah. Hell yeah, I know that song. It's a bop.
Or even Love Story. Love Story just continues to surprise me, because I feel like it really is, like, if you ask people that, like, haven't kept up with Taylor in the last couple of years, they know Love Story. Everybody knows that fucking song. People's moms know Love Story. So there was a country version of We Are Never Ever Getting Back Together released to radio with banjos.
It's a nightmare.
This was our first hint at resistance from Scott Borchetta. I mean, Taylor briefly mentioned that with 1989, she really had to crack the whip and fight to have a pop album. And I'm guessing that he did that with We Are Never, too, because he insisted on making a country version to send to country radio. And
yeah, I mean, it was bad.
You should look at it on YouTube if you've never heard of it. It is appalling.
It's so really fucking bad, dude. It's, like, unlistenably bad.
There are a lot nightmare. Of Taylor Swift pop songs that could be country songs purely because of the writing, but this is not one of them.
All I know is I was baffled by the fact that they were pushing it. Like that, you know what I mean? Like, you really think that We Are Never Ever is gonna chart on country radio because you add a couple of banjos to it? Like, I mean come on, ridiculous. Girl. Yeah.
Scott Borchetta, my dude, just let it go.
Yeah, let it the fuck go.
It was overall received well by critics. Everybody was a little bit shook, obviously, because of the shift. Critics compared it to Avril Lavigne, which I think is actually a really good comparison.
Yeah,
it's got that bratty, shouty thing that Taylor hasn't done. But it was very girlfriend.
Yes, it was honestly, that's probably the best, like, comparison, because Avril went from doing, like, her little, you know, pop punk girl thing to just being, like, pop.
Yeah. And I mean, the problem with Avril is that she didn't have the writing to back it up. So when she went pop, it was, like, all fluff, no substance. Whereas Taylor, like, retained her personality and skill, which I think is the key if you're going to do a genre switch like that.
Exactly, yeah.
And Rolling Stone said that the song had a zing that was more Stockholm than Nashville. How astute of them. Well, I mean, that's it. The next episode that we will be bringing to you, 2012 Part 2, will be getting into the headache years for us, because Taylor was just fucking everywhere, doing everything at all times.
I'm literally living in fear of doing the 1989 era. It's gonna be like four episodes.
Yeah, I can't. 1989, I can't even think about 1989.
I'm scared.
I can't think about it. So in the next episode, you have to look forward to the Red album coming out and our thoughts on the whole album, which will take a while because there are a lot of songs.
Lots of songs.
I think we'll have three singles and videos to discuss. And, you know, Haler.
Oh, shit. Yes. Haler.
Haler. That's the girls have been asking, and I'm scared.
Yeah. It's so funny because at the time, I guess I don't have to get into this. I'll talk about it later. But I don't really give a shit about Haler either way, and I didn't ever. So it's just going to be really interesting.
We'll be coming at it from an objective sense, because neither of us are, like, Haler fans.
Yeah, neither of us are antis. Neither of us are pros. I mean, I guess I would say I'm pro.
I'm pro, like, also, but not in, like,
but like
a,
no, I'm not like a, I'm not a tin I'm wearing my way. Tin hat. Yeah.
But yeah, so we are thinking that between this episode and the next episode, we're gonna do a podcast where we talk about Cats. We go and see it, and then we immediately come home and write some notes while we're watching the movie and talk about it, because it's gonna be a mess. I'm terrified. But apparently she's only in it for like 5 to 8 minutes, which at first I was pissed about because of how much they've marketed her. But I think I might be grateful for it once I see the movie.
Honestly, the less the better. I knew it too.
Could they
like,
edit
I knew
her
that
out?
Bitch was barely in the fucking film. I knew that she was barely fucking in it. Because her part in the play itself is bit.
So look forward to that coming before the end of the year. Between Christmas and New Year's, we're gonna try and get that up. Also, we're gonna think of something to do with our Patreon for the extra podcast episode that we have. It's 30 minutes, it's unedited, so it's not going to be like super high value production like our amazing podcast is right now. But you know, you'll be getting fed. So if you would like to get 3 podcasts a month, you can pledge $10 to our Patreon, which you should go and sign up for. And also follow us on Twitter at @TSwiftPodcast, and we will be seeing you very shortly, we promise, maybe.
Yes, pinky.